There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
Tom Walker, Robbie Greenfield and Ross Chris with you through till 6 o'clock this evening. What are we doing? We're sat here at Barasti talking sport, watching sport, just loving sport at the moment as well. Premier League early kickoff is underway. Wolves against Man City. We are 39 minutes into the first half. It's been a cracker. Champions of the Championship taking champions of Premier League from last season. And it has been a champions affair. Robbie Greenfield.
Well, it is goalless, Tom, but I'm not quite sure how it is goalless, because this has been a very, very entertaining game of football at the Molyneux. And I think the headline from this is that Wolves have more than held their own playing football against Manchester City, rather than setting out with the sole objective of getting as many men behind the ball as possible and trying to defend. City, though, have grown into this game, and they're starting to crank up the pressure on Wolves and starting to dominate play just around and in the Wolves penalty area. We saw some early chances for Wolves. We saw a disallowed goal which was ruled for offside, and in fact a chance that just fell to Sergio Aguero. Not the first chance that he's had in this first half. The Argentinian striker, off that back of the hat-trick that he scored against Huddersfield, has hit the post in this first half. Rui Patricio has saved an absolute world-class shot from Raheem Sterling, a shot that was swerving into the top corner. It was palmed away by Rui Patricio, but Manchester City growing into this game and starting to dominate in a manner that is worrying for Wolves. Benjamin Mendy has been lively on that left side, the left back. And well, let's hear now from Pep Guardiola talking about how Mendy's return to the setup this season has proved so advantageous for the team.
You talk about the tactics. We cannot demand Fabian and Zinchenko do what Mendy does in terms of up and downs and attack the space and his physicality, because they have another physical conditions. So we adapt the way we attack and defend, adapting Fabian Zinchenko, but we didn't have another option last season. So that's why when we speak about tactics, we had to speak about first the quality of the players and how they move with their mates for the way we want to play.
So there, Benjamin Mendy, the impact that he's had, as stated by Pep Guardiola, and he has been in devastating form, providing a couple, three assists, I think, so far this season from that left wing-back position. What about Wolverhampton Wanderers? They were expected to be beaten today at the Molyneux Stadium, the team that won last season's championship. A lot has been expected of them. They've got some quality players all over the park, and they've managed to hold Manchester City, or keep them at bay for the first 42 minutes, and provide some attacking threat of their own as we watch them race up the right-hand touchline once again and into a pretty good position. We'll stay with this because Costa has just whipped the ball back and it's been rebounded off a Manchester City player, and the immediate threat has gone. But Nuno Espirito Santo, the charismatic coach for Wolverhampton Wanderers, was speaking ahead of this game, and very true to his word, because we've seen them play some expansive football. He says that they only know one way to play.
We don't know how to play other way. There are two ways of reacting to something that happened, for example, against Leicester. Or we react by changing, or not. We'll not change, because we want to build something. The more important is that we build and keep doing the same things that we trained, that we want to achieve. And another opportunity to do so. Not change, but adapt, of course, because you have a good opponent in front of you, but don't change. When you want to build something, you have to truly believe in what you're doing and keep pushing on to it.
Those two teams are playing at the moment. How much Premier League football is on these days?
An awful lot.
Hundreds of thousands, tens of thousands at the moment. But still, you can have one of those sort of moments where we've just seen with Benjamin Mendy on the side. He's just been called for a foul throw.
Yeah, that was the ultimate foot fault, wasn't it? His foot was, as he launched the ball, it was probably about 2 feet inside the touchline. And he was called, as Tom mentioned, for a foul throw. So the game just simmering along now. It looks like it's going to finish goalless by half time. I'm not quite sure how it's going to finish goalless, because we've seen plenty of chances at both ends. I'm sure there will be goals in the second half, but well played Wolves thus far. It's 0-0 and they've acquitted themselves very well.
Just want to turn our attention to other football across the world and in the other leagues, because lots of leagues getting back underway this weekend with their new 2018-2019 campaigns. MLS, of course, have been in action pretty much throughout the summer, throughout the last couple of months. We had more games last night and over the weekend thus far. So let's get an update from the MLS, from Our resident American, Ross Crist.
That's right. It was the final regular season installment of the MLS Derby, El Tráfico, the trafficking. Mr. Zlatan Ibrahimovic inch closer to his milestone of 500 career goals, netting his 499th goal in a great six-yard kick there in the 15th minute. For Los Angeles Galaxy to tie Los Angeles Football Club 1-1. So that was a draw in El Tráfico. So no one gets to go home with the bragging rights in Los Angeles last night. Elsewhere across the MLS, Orlando City fell to Atlanta United FC. Perez and Martinez scored for Atlanta United FC. And for Orlando, it was Sutter netting a goal. Elsewhere across the MLS, Atlanta FC in first place, New York Red Bulls in second place, and third place in the Eastern Conference, New York FC in fourth place, Columbus Crew SC. So that's the top four in the East. Elsewhere in the West, FC Dallas in first place, LAFC in second place, Sporting Kansas City in third, and Real Salt Lake in fourth, and LA Galaxy inching closer to that fourth spot in the fifth spot. Those are the seedings in the MLS, Tom. Season is wrapping up here soon.
The Bundesliga got underway last night. Ordinarily, we wouldn't get that excited about the Bundesliga kicking off because it is ordinarily dominated by one, maybe two teams season on season. But given the performances of Germany and the rocking of the foundations of German football at this year's World Cup, a lot of eyeballs were on the opener last night. It saw Bayern Munich start their defence of their title against 1899 Hoffenheim, who they were expected to beat convincingly. On paper, they did exactly that. Finished 3-1, gives them all 3 points. But it was an instant pack game, and one former international who was anything but convinced about Bayern Munich's performance was Steve Nicol.
So Bayern starts off with a 3-1 win. Mm. I would say that that looks good on paper. Stevie, you were watching this game and you weren't really impressed.
No, I wasn't impressed. You know, I expected Bayern to win the game. They got the job done. And on paper, yes, 3-1. Start of the season looks good. But I've got to say, I wasn't impressed with the way they went about it. That pace that certainly the Bayern under Pep Guardiola has gone, you know, it's kind of slumbering. You've got Javi Martinez in the middle, who's not the quickest thing on two legs. They've got no pace at the back with Boateng and Schürrle. So I wasn't impressed. I wasn't surprised with the result, but I was not impressed with the performance.
Former Scotland international Steve Nicol giving his thoughts there. It could be a crucial season, not just for Bayern, but for the Bundesliga.
Yeah, it really could, Tom. As you say, coming off the back of a World Cup that has sent shockwaves through German football and rather like happened 16, 17 years ago, perhaps forced some very difficult questions. I've been amazed at the vitriol spouted from Uli Hoeneß, the Bayern Munich president, towards Mesut Ozil and that decision of his to retire on the grounds that he felt that he was racially abused or at least racially discriminated against, given his Turkish heritage, in that German shirt. And I think that's posed an awful lot of soul-searching and an awful lot of questions that are still being felt at the very heart and the very deepest levels of German football. But if we look at Bayern Munich and a team that has been so dominant domestically for the last 7 or 8 seasons, it's been a team that won the Champions League in 2013 but has subsequently failed at that elite level. And I think, rather like Real Madrid, for a team like Bayern Munich, they'll always be measured on their performances in the Champions League. That's the competition that defines them, given how successful they've been in the Bundesliga. But they've got a new coach in charge. Jupp Heynckes has departed. He was the steady hand that very much steadied the ship and brought them all that domestic success last season when Carlo Ancelotti left, going back to the helm at Bayern Munich. Now it's Niko Kovac, a former player for Bayern Munich, a man who was in charge of Eintracht Frankfurt last season, who took them to a cup final and mid-table in the Bundesliga. But this is a totally different set of requirements and a totally different challenge now, managing the biggest club in Germany. And just looking at the team, Tom, they've not made any noticeably huge signings over the last sort of few months or so. And when you look at the players that have been so good for them, Frank Ribery, Ian Robben, Thomas Müller, even Robert Lewandowski, who was a relatively new signing from Dortmund, Jerome Boateng, Manuel Neuer, none of them are spring chickens. This is a team that is very much at the end of its phase of kind of, or its transitional period, where they're going to need to make some adjustments. That they've already lost Arturo Vidal to Barcelona, which I think is a big loss for them in the middle of the park. And I'm expecting a challenging season for Bayern Munich. The sad thing is they'll probably still win the Bundesliga, yeah, because looking at the other teams, you don't really see a team there. You know, Borussia Dortmund have had their problems. Hoffenheim had a good season last year, but, you know, as we saw last night, that they're not quite on Bayern Munich's level, even though the game was competitive into the last 10 minutes. You look at RB Leipzig as well. Can they continue their development? Unfortunately, Bayern Munich are very much the big fish in that pond from a competitive point of view, but I don't think this is going to be a straightforward season for them.
Five games getting underway at 5:30 this afternoon, and then Borussia Mönchengladbach take on Bayer Leverkusen at 8:30 this evening. Meanwhile, over in France, action back underway there. Toulon take on Nîmes, Nice against Dijon, Nantes against Caen, Montpellier against Saint-Étienne, Amiens are at home to Reims. All of those kicking off at 10 o'clock. Before all that, those, the big guns, PSG, are in action against Angers. That one kicks off at 7 o'clock. A lot of focus on the big names at Paris Saint-Germain. The man who's in charge of trying to keep those egos in check is, of course, Thomas Tuchel, who said he ignores and is ignoring all of what's going on social media between a couple of his big guns.
I think nobody can believe what's on Kylian right now, and how many questions he have to answer, and how big the interest is, and if he overtakes Neymar or not, or if there are even, I could not care less, I have to be honest. I want him on my pitch at 11 o'clock or at 5 o'clock today, professional, with a good mood, and then I'm fine. And if they are on Instagram or not, I don't care. For me, it's the best they live without smartphone, but that will not happen.
Mbappe and Neymar going head-to-head on Instagram and followers at the moment. Paris Saint-Germain against Angers, both of those two on the pitch at 7 o'clock this evening over in Ligue 1. We're going to take a short break when we come back. We've got other European leagues to look at. Plus, we go stateside with Ross Chris.
Unbelievable goal!
This is The Grill, live from Barasti, where the game is always on.
Let's get the latest then from the world of sport. You're listening to Dubai Eye 103.8. We are broadcasting live from Barasti. That's the ambience you can hear behind us. All the games, of all the big games that you want to be watching today in the world of sport being shown down here at Barasti. So make sure if it's the Rugby Championship, it's the Premier League, if it's some of the big European leagues, you'll be able to watch your sport down here at Barasti. And if you stay late enough or get here early enough, you'll also be able to tap in to the world of American sport. If, however, you value your beauty sleep and you want someone to bring you bang up to date with what's been happening, we've got the man with the plan. Ross Christ is here with us. What can you tell us?
Well, boys, there's a lot going on stateside right now. We got the baseball, the final playoff push for the final wild card. So we'll get to that a little bit later in the show. But right now, NFL is back. While it's not the regular season, and it's not quite as exciting, it is the NFL preseason. This is week three. This is where guys are vying for one of these 53 spots on an NFL roster. This is where guys maybe were a backup last year, trying to become a starter this year. So there's a lot of interesting, intriguing matches that goes into these preseason games. And if you need to get caught up on what is the NFL preseason, for those of you listening at home and to my two co-hosts on the show today, watch NFL Hard Knocks with the Cleveland Browns. That will let you know about everything that happens in the NFL, in the offseason, in the preseason. So let's dive into week three right now. It was the Denver Broncos taking on the Washington Redskins. This was in the nation's capital. The Broncos ended up winning this game 29-17. Starter Case Keenum played a little bit better for Denver, going 12 for 18 for 148 yards. John Elway, Denver's general manager, came under a lot of fire for hiring Case Keenum this year, taking him away from Minnesota. Minnesota didn't want him. They brought him out to the Mile High City, and they paid him a big, big contract. He has not played well in his first two games, but he played well last night, going 12 for 18 for 148 yards. However, the biggest news in the nation's capital has got to be free agent signing, who got signed last week from the unemployment line, 33-year-old Adrian Peterson. He had 11 carries and 56 yards, and he was proving to the Redskins and their fans that he still has enough juice in the tank to be the starter.
I guess that I still got some juice left. You know, it's never been a surprise to me or, you know, a question to me, but, you know, just being out of the game for a little bit, you know, people always want to question you, especially when you're 30, 33, you know, so You know, when I say you can't box people in, you know, I feel like tonight was just an okay example of that.
And you said in the press conference that you were excited. You felt excited about after what you showed. What was it? Was there something that kind of jumped out to you that kind of says, this is why I can still do something?
I think just as a whole, you know, just how I felt as far as my conditioning, how my legs felt, and, you know, just kind of response I was getting. I was like, wow, you know, like I feel like I'm at 80% right now. So, you know, once... You know, I continue to run and get this system down here in the next two and a half weeks. And once I get to 100%, it'll be a totally different ball game.
Adrian Peterson there. He says he's got his legs underneath him. He got his juice back. I've seen some of his Instagram workouts. Boy, does he still look good at 33 years old. He looks like he still does at 23 years old.
He has to be careful using that expression, doesn't he?
You're getting the juice. Yeah, yes. In this day and age of PEDs. But I can assure you, I think Adrian Peterson plays the game clean. Elsewhere across the NFL, it was the New York shootout. New York Giants going against the New York Jets. Giants were victorious in this one, 22-16. Eli Manning went 12-for-23. Good news for Giants fans. He played well, 188 yards for Eli Manning. New York Giants coming in with a new coach this year. A lot of people were calling for Eli's job last year, so he needs to put up. The 15th-year pro has not done a whole lot lately for the Giants. It's a big, big year for him. If he doesn't get it done this year, there'll be talks for him to retire. Sterling Shepard went 7 receptions for 78 yards for the Giants, and Presley had 12 carries for 71 yards for the Giants. However, the big news, the big storyline to come out of this one is on the Jets side of things. Who's going to be the starting quarterback for the New York Jets? Is it going to be McCown, who played very well at 35 years old that last year, or is it going to be the rookie that they drafted out of USC, Sam Darnold? Sam Darnold thinks he's been playing his heart out, and he has a shot at the first-string quarterback position.
At the end of the day, that's up to the coaches. So I'm not here to say that I've won the job or that I've lost the job. I'm just going to continue to play consistent football, continue to put my best foot forward for the team, continue to be, you know, a good leader for the team, and really just be myself, continue to be myself. And at the end of the day, that's a coach's decision.
That is the coach's decision. We'll figure out who is the starting quarterback for the Jets here. They're going to make their decision probably by next week. So if you're a Jets fan, if you're sitting home with your green and white and your helmet on right now, I think you might go with Darnold. I'd go with the young blood in the Big Apple. Friday night's game was the Cleveland Browns going against the Philadelphia Eagles. If you are new to sports, like I said before, please go online, Google, figure out how to watch Hard Knocks training camp with the Cleveland Browns. If you love sport, this is a great thing that HBO puts together for you, or you could just watch it on HBO the old-fashioned way if you wanted to do it like that. But the Cleveland Browns were taking on the world champion Philadelphia Eagles in Cleveland, and listen to this score, boys, 5-0. 5-0 final score. You don't get that much in you don't see that much in American football. Nick Foles for Philadelphia, he played atrocious. 13 for 17 with 2 interceptions. So can we see the calling for Nick Foles to the bench? We will see in this one. Elsewhere on the Cleveland Browns side of things, is it going to be Tyrod Taylor, the free agent that they brought over from the Buffalo Bills under center, or number one overall pick Baker Mayfield? Well, Baker Mayfield threw a pick six in this one, and it did not look good.
I would never say it's a good opportunity when our leader and captain and tie goes down. But yeah, getting out there with the ones, that's something I need to do. I did that tonight, and that's why I'm disappointed in myself. I didn't take advantage of it. I didn't, you know, play my best game. So that's on me. That's, you know, what we do with the reps. I just have to play the best when I get them, and that's plain and simple. And how it is.
Carson Wentz, Ross, is obviously the number one choice as quarterback for the Philadelphia Eagles, who ironically won the Super Bowl with Nick Foles, their number two quarterback, playing an absolutely inspirational role in that prime match. But what is the status on the health of Carson Wentz, and is he going to be ready for at least the majority of this season?
News conference last week, Carson Wentz thinks he will be ready by week one or week two. I'm going to say Nick Foles is starting under center for Philadelphia Eagles. He got Super Bowl MVP. He's been running with the ones. He's been running with the first team for all of training camp right now. So I see Carson Wentz coming in week two, week three. But here's the thing. If Foles puts up 4 touchdowns in his first game, 3 touchdowns in his second game,
you can't drop him.
You can't drop him. He just won you the Super Bowl. So it's a good problem to have that they have in the city of brotherly love right now in Philadelphia. But if Foles plays lights out, or if he plays even a little bit shaky, this is a great piece of trade bait for another team looking for a quarterback here if you have a starter that goes down throughout the season. I could see maybe Nick Foles and his team-friendly contract getting traded elsewhere across the NFL. Some of the other scores, the Panthers beat the Patriots 25-14. Rob Gronkowski started in his first preseason game. He played 16 snaps. He did not record a catch in this one. Cam Newton caught a black eye in this one, hopping over the offensive line. The Minnesota Vikings won 21-20 over the Seattle Seahawks. Caleb Scott had two receptions for 69 yards in this one. The Detroit Lions won 33-30 over the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. This was down in Florida. And the Oakland Raiders beat the Green Bay Packers 13-6. This was in Oakland. Elsewhere later in today, guys, if you want to get up early and watch some of the games, local time at 12:30, I guess tomorrow morning, or if you want to call it tonight, the 49ers take on the Colts. Andrew Luck back in the starting position for the Indianapolis Colts, who will be playing at Lucas Oil Stadium in Indianapolis. Rich Sherman has come under criticism. The free agent cornerback signed over from the Seattle Seahawks has been getting beat a lot in practice, and he says, who cares? It's just practice.
You know, at the end of the day, we're not, at least I'm not concerned about the outside world, you know, oh, man, he got beat in practice. Like, I've been beat a ton in practice. I've been beat probably thousands of times in practice. But the amount of times I'm beat on a Sunday with the lights on is very limited because in practice you're working. You're working your craft. You're trying to figure out what you're going to do. That's like you guys putting out an article that's a rough draft and putting it out for everybody to see. It's like, hey, this is a rough draft. Yes, it has some typos, some mistakes, some notes, some stuff that doesn't look right. The wording's off. No commas, no periods, yada, yada, yada. But this is a rough draft. I'm sorry that you saw it before I put out the final product. You know, what we see on Sunday is the final product. So I think people get kind of lost in that. You know, you get lost in practice reps and say, oh, my God, did you see what happened in practice? Well, I mean, it looks good. It sounds good. But it's a whole lot going on in practice. Like Kyle said, it's technique. It's guys working on different steps because you're allowed to make mistakes in practice. You're allowed to get beat and stumble because then you figure out what works and what doesn't work. If you find something that works, you keep using it, you keep using it, you put it in your bag, you use it on game day. On game day, you're using your best stuff.
More from Christo in just a few moments' time. We'll have all your US sport for you. And talking of sports, a Premier League early kickoff is back underway. Wolves take on Man City. We take a short break when we come back. In fact, we're going to stay stateside and we're going to preview next week's US Open.
The Grill has all the sport you need right now on Dubai Eye 103.8.
50 minutes played between Wolves against Man City. No goals in that one. No early kickoffs in the Championship or Scotland to bring you up to date with. So we'll keep an eye on that one for you. The Grill, though, is 3 hours, not just of live sport, but also looking back at some of the big sporting moments, but also looking ahead to some of the big sports events that we can look forward to in the coming days and weeks. And they don't get much bigger than all lights on at the Arthur Ashe Stadium in the United States as the US Open gets underway tomorrow.
Four aces for Arthur. They're going to try to play the
Built by Arthur and Billy, Jimmy and Chrissy, Martina, Mac, and countless others. Built through determination and drive, passion and pride. Built on the strength of a city that never sleeps and players who never give up. Built from hopes, dreams, and what-ifs. Built to inspire and amaze. Built to be the world's grandest stage. Built for the fans and the future. For challengers and champions.
United States Open.
The 2018 U.S. Open. Built for glory.
Built for glory and built to withstand as well. Significant year for them, this one. It's the 50th anniversary of tennis in the Open era, the professional Open era, that is. And they'll be going to town on that one. Ross and Robbie have been working through the draws, the order of plays, and some tough ones, Robbie.
Yeah, certainly. If you look at the men's draw, Rafa Nadal, the defending champion, the top seed at Flushing Meadow, is meeting an old rival, a man who he's played in the French Open final, no less, and a compatriot in the shape of David Ferrer. That is a really, really tricky first round match for Rafa Nadal. I'm sure he won't be overly enthused at the prospect of playing a man who is nothing if not gritty. David Ferrer will always give his all on every single point, as will Nadal, and you'd expect Rafa to come through that one. And in many ways, it might be useful for him to get an early test under his belt, because this is not going to be a straightforward defence of a tournament that he won in pretty short order last year. 12 months ago, he beat Kevin Anderson in straight sets in the final. He was relatively untroubled, was Nadal, en route to a third title at Flushing Meadow. And I think that the rivals that he's got in front of him for this particular instalment, the 2018 US Open, Tom, are in finer fettle. And the name of Novak Djokovic, Cincinnati Masters champion, a man who completed the Golden Slam of the Masters 1000 series in a two-sets victory over Roger Federer last weekend, for me, for my money, is the man on form, and he's the man to beat.
Novak Djokovic, as you mentioned there, has been in scintillating form throughout the summer months, and he's really sort of hit his straps recently. He then, of course, concluded that at Cincinnati, so he's in fine form going into this one, and he's well aware of that as well. Let's hear from Novak.
Yeah, by far the best performance of the week. Came at the best possible time. Finals for the sixth time here in Cincinnati against the great Roger Federer, who is the most dominant player in the history of this tournament. He won it seven times, and he's beaten me, I think, in the previous three or four finals. So, you know, it was difficult coming into the match knowing that I've lost to him every single time I played him on this court. But at the same time, I felt good about my chances, because I felt like I was starting to play better and better as the tournament progressed, and I was kind of raising the level of tennis, and just a perfect match today. It's definitely one of the most special moments of my career, being the only player in history to win all Masters and Slams. You know, it's definitely something that I'll be very, very proud of for the rest of my life.
What do you reckon, Ross? Novak favorite?
I think there's a couple other people that might raise their hand for that one. One Spaniard right now who's the number one overall seed in this tournament coming into this one. So, and how about Mr. Roger Federer, the man he placed last week in Ohio? I actually drove by this tournament during the final. Really, really cool.
Did you stop off?
I couldn't stop off. My mom said I had to be home for supper, Robbie Greenfield, and you can't make Mrs. Christ angry.
No, of course not.
Of course, I rolled down my window to see if I could hear any grunts from the serving, but they put on a great, great spectacle down there in southwestern Ohio for the Cincinnati Open. But yeah, gosh, I don't know if we actually do have an odds-on favorite. It's great to know that going into the U.S. Open that we don't know who will win this thing. It's a wide-open tournament in terms of the men. Of course, you have your front-runners right now. Novak Djokovic is one of these front-runners. He just won last week. He has the momentum. But can you count out a lot of these other players right now?
Look, I mean, obviously, it's, as you say, there's no odds-on favorite per se, but I just feel that once Novak gets the bit between his teeth and he gets into his groove, we've seen it before. He's almost impossible to beat, certainly on the hard courts of Flushing Meadow, where he's won twice before. He's, was it three times? I think he's a two- or three-time champion. I need to double-check that. But I just think that Roger and Rafa had it their own way for a while. Novak was out of the picture. He was injured. He was dealing with various things that were going on. And of course, as we watch a Wolves chance there, Costa missing, saved by Edison. But we digress. I mean, when it comes to the dominance that we saw with Roger Federer and Rafa Nadal, that was very much ended, I feel, at Wimbledon. Djokovic, in that great thriller against Nadal, really announced himself back on the world stage. And I think we're going to see him get better and better. And I feel like question marks still hang over the likes of Alex Zverev, the number four seed, the man who's recruited Ivan Lendl into his coaching setup, who we know had such an incredible impact on Andy Murray, at his time a world number four player. And I wonder, will he have a positive impact on what Zverev can achieve? So much potential. And we have a goal at Molineux. And incredibly, Tom Urquhart and Ross Chris, it has gone the way of the home side. We saw a chance for Wolves, saved by Edison. They have capitalised on the corner, the resultant corner from that. Still waiting to see the identity of the man, Bowley, who has nodded them in front of... it was a beautiful cross.
I think it's Bowley. Is it Bowley?
Whipped in. It is... off the shoulder, rather than the head. It's a bit of a scrappy goal in all honesty, but it won't matter. It is Willy Bowley. You are quite correct, Tom Urquhart. He has nodded Wolves in front at the Molineux Stadium. 57 minutes on the clock. Beautiful ball in, and no danger of offside. They've been pulled back for a couple of offsides so far in this match. Ederson stationary and unable to do anything about that. Two players went for it. It was Bowley.
Oh dear.
That is not just a shoulder. That's gone in off his hand. If VAR had been in use in this Premier League, as it is in the Bundesliga and was in the World Cup, that goal would have been disallowed. Astonishing stuff. Wolves lead through a handball goal.
Talking tennis, talking US Open, gets underway next week, early hours of Monday morning. Rafa Nadal, the defending champion and the six-time US Open women's champion, Serena Williams, both in action on the first night. They will be playing under the bright lights of Arthur Ashe Stadium on Monday. Also in action, we'll see Victoria Azarenka and Juan Martín Del Potro on the opening night. They lead in the Armstrongs' first ever scheduled nighttime action over on the Louis Armstrong Stadium. Sloane Stephens, Venus Williams, Andy Murray, Stan Wawrinka, Svetlana Kuznetsova, as well as the women's top seed Simona Halep, will all be in action. Kevin Anderson, the 2017 men's finalist, two-time Grand Slam champion Garbiñ Muguruza, and the big-hitting Americans Isner, Querrey and Sock, all in action as well on the Monday's day session for the US Open. It is a tournament that is steeped in history.
Before this slam became so grand, before all the glitz and all the glam, before Arthur Ashe was a stadium full of fans, there was just Arthur Ashe, the man. A symbol of change in a year of great change and greater challenges facing America.
I shall not sue the nomination of my party for another term as your president.
And against that backdrop of revolution, a most revolutionary thing was happening in tennis. As the sport's major events opened their doors to professional players, allowing them to compete with amateurs to finally see who's best, ushering in a new open era of tennis. And in 1968, the U.S. National Championships became the U.S. Open. With Arthur Ashe, an amateur, capturing the inaugural men's crown, and Virginia Wade, a professional, capturing the women's title. That first year would set the tone for an event that would come to be known for both evolution and revolution. An event defined by equality, innovation, and excitement. And in the 50 years that followed, a tennis championship has become a grand event. Its players, global celebrities, its stage, the grandest in the sport. The U.S. Open, built on history, built for glory.
Yeah, steeped in history, celebrating 50 years of the Open era today. So many great memories down there. The fans play their part. It's a raucous atmosphere. You've got the night sessions coming on the Louis Armstrong Stadium for the first time this year as well, so more innovation. I know it's one of those tournaments that likes to innovate, and it was good to see that one as well, isn't it? Because I know on the day that we've heard that the French Open is not allowing Serena Williams to wear her cat suit at the tournament next time round.
Tiger suit.
Her tiger suit, that's right. A superhero-inspired tiger suit. I just like the US Open because it seems to be have that sort of relaxed atmosphere. There's always a celeb or two who comes on court, does something silly, isn't there, Ross?
Yeah, it's certainly, I think, the more entertaining of all the Grand Slams, wouldn't you say, boys? It's in terms of people that come in there. Robbie Greenfield shaking his head right now.
I need to interject there.
It's in
are you
New
kidding
York.
Me?
It's in New York. What else is in
it's
New York?
Got
we
the
have
razzmatazz.
Celebrities. It has everything. The musicians, the celebrities, everyone comes in. We have night tennis now. People come in after they can go to work now and catch a game. It's certainly one of the more, I guess, fan-friendly tournaments as well. So
yeah, look, you're absolutely right. Look, I mean, I think given the ridiculous situation that we saw with Djokovic and Nadal having to stop that that night match that they were playing on center court under the roof due to the local rule that there's a curfew at 11 p.m. in SW19, it just goes to show how restricted and how stuffy Wimbledon is. But I mean, for me, there's no doubt which was the most prestigious of the Grand Slams, and that
is
Wimbledon.
I didn't say prestigious. But, I said entertaining.
I don't know how I feel about music at the changeovers. Is it demeaning the action a little bit? I mean, I'm very stuffy. I'm a traditionalist myself. I hold my hands up and completely accept that. But I do like some of the innovations the US Open have brought in. I love what they did with social media last year with the... They turned the shots into... They had one Martin Del Potro and the Thor's hammer, didn't they? Yeah. With the forehand and that kind of thing. They had a bit of fun with their social media. The players bought into it. Roger Federer and Rafa Nadal were sharing clips on their own social media page. So you're right, Ross. It's the most fun of the four Grand Slams. I just think that sometimes... Is that not the domain of ATP Tour events to make things a bit more lighthearted? Should a Grand Slam be a bit more... traditional in its approach to the actual matches themselves rather than blasting out Beyonce at the changeovers?
Tennis is boring. It's getting boring.
Are you kidding me?
They need... Listen, you can say it. You can sit at home all you want. Without these four guys right now in tennis, without it, tennis is dead. It's like golf without Tiger. All right? It's boring. So, you look at Djokovic last week. What did he say after Cincinnati? Switch it down to three sets. We need a younger crowd. We need more younger fans. And Roger Federer took the opposite stance. He took the Robbie Greenfield stance. Is keep it how it is. Don't change anything like that. You need to change with the times. You need social media. You need the music. You need to captivate your young audience. Because once these four are gone, gentlemen, what do you have?
You're pandering to the lowest common denominator is what you're doing when you do that, in my opinion. Five sets. We'd lose all the classics. We wouldn't have the 2008 Wimbledon final. We wouldn't have the classic match we've just seen between Djokovic and Nadal because it would be over in three. It's a horrendous idea. Some of the best matches in tennis history would just simply never have happened. Because really, in a three-set match, as we see week in, week out on the ATP Tour, anything can happen. It's a bit of a shootout. Over five sets, the best man will win. And it's not like they're physically incapable of doing it because we saw John Isner and Kevin Anderson play for about 27 hours in their semi-final at Wimbledon. I hate to disagree with Billie Jean King, who I know has her own agenda in trying to force the men to play three sets. I could not disagree more with that idea. I like some of the innovations that the US Open have made. I like some of the changes that they've done, the approach they've had with the social media. It is the most lighthearted of the Grand Slams. I don't know. Some of these changes, I feel like we're trying to change things for the sake of pandering to an attention span problematic generation. That's the issue I've got with it.
Boys have given their thoughts, and they are valid thoughts. What about your thoughts, though? Text us on 4001. What needs to be changed, if anything? And in light of the fact that Robbie has just admitted that he likes, tradition, we have tapped into the archives to come up with the first ever broadcast, all those 50 years ago of the Open era, from the final of the men's final of the US Open, which was, of course, immortalised by a certain Arthur Ashe.
Good afternoon, Bud Collins, along with Jack Cramer, with you at Forest Hills, where we're reaching the climax of an extraordinary event in tennis, the first US Open. And we have two amateurs, Tom Ocker of the Netherlands, Arthur Ashe of the United States, Richmond, Virginia, and the U.S. Army. And his first of what I'm sure will be many aces. Let's see. First game, Arthur Ashe. 5-4 for Ashe. There's number 11 for Aces Ashe. Oh boy, what a game by Arthur Ashe. Power, speed, accuracy, touch, he played them all.
And he's got it!
Complete standing ovation for Arthur Ashe. This is the year of Arthur Ashe.
Unbelievable goal!
This is The Grill, live from Barasti, where the game is always on.
I forget the game. We've got a great debate going on here at the moment, but there is a game going on. It is a great game as well. Wolves against Man City, 67 and a half minutes in. Wolves lead this one by 1-0. Man City do have a free kick just to the right of the box, just outside the 16-yard line. So plenty to just outside the penalty box, I should say. So we'll keep an eye on that one for you. Any developments there, you'll be the first to know. In the meantime, just before we went to that break, we were talking about innovations in sport. We were talking about the demands of not just millennials, but the younger generations as well. And social media, let's break away from that because there's been a goal in the football. Tell me more, Robbie Greenfield.
There has been a goal. It's come from an unlikely source as well, Tom, and it is an equalising goal for Manchester City. It is scored by Aymeric Laporte, the centre-back. He has been the first man to get on the end of an Ilkay Gundogan ball into the box, timing his run into the six-yard box to perfection and nodding powerfully past a prostrate Rui Patricio in the Wolves' goal. It is 1-1. Manchester City, who will have felt very hard done by the fact that Willy Boly's opening goal for Wolves had definite handball about it, and then a clear push from Ruben Neves on the back of David Silva in the penalty box just a few minutes later. City would have felt hard done by that they weren't awarded a penalty kick for that one. They have got their equaliser. We are seeing what the champions are made of in this one. It is Wolves 1, City 1. Wolves have acquitted themselves brilliantly. The game is in the balance, 69 minutes on the clock. City have equalised through Laporte.
Talking innovations in sport, want to talk boxing very quickly. Why? There is a very well documented, or certainly marketed and billed about a little later on. The two aren't renowned or registered boxers per se. So is this therefore sport or is this entertainment?
I think it's a bit of both right now, because in your home country, a little north of you, Tom, in Manchester today, Mr. KSI, he's a YouTuber with over 19 million followers, will be taking on Logan Paul. You all know who Logan Paul is. He came out to the desert last year. Fame Instagrammer, fame YouTuber, fame Twitter and Instagram star in a bout. And they won't be the only bout. There's also an undercard to this bout that will feature the other Paul brother, Jake Paul, going against Comedy Shorts Gamers. Now, if you guys know any of these names, I think the panel here at Barassi might be a little bit too old for some of these, but some of the kids can chime in here. Tell us at 4001. And Isam Gibb going against Jay Swingler. Raka Raka versus Sars. Fozzie Sensei going on against Overthrow. Coach Richard going against JMX. Momo going against Rossi HD. At 9 p.m., KSI takes on Logan Paul. That's the main event in the bout. That's 9 p.m. Manchester local time. So if you want to get up for that one, 20,000 people have bought tickets to this, in the ring tickets. And they're saying this could be breaking pay-per-view records.
Mm. I hope they both land a knockout punch simultaneously and both end up on the canvas, never to re-emerge on the internet again.
Listen, it is answering the demands of generations of followers, and it will be followed, as you said, around the world. Talking of demands, talking of innovations in sport, return to your beloved golf as well, because we had news this week of a new format.
Yeah, indeed. Well, certainly a one-off, an exhibition match. We've seen those before. They're not particularly new when it comes to golf, but a lot of the talking and a lot of the rumours around a potential match between Tiger Woods and Phil Mickelson over the course of the summer, well, they've come to fruition, Tom, and let's delve into this in a little bit more detail if we can. This is the how it all started, the early barbs, the jabs that were fired across press conferences between Tiger Woods and Phil Mickelson that has culminated in the richest exhibition match ever to be made in golf.
15 years ago, my record against them sucked, and now it's okay. So I'm doing better as time has gone on.
Overall, you're only one up on them, though, head to head.
How many times have we both?
32.
No. Have we won on tour?
So yeah, there's
okay.
That.
Yeah.
Why don't we just bypass all the ancillary stuff of a tournament and just go head to head and just have a kind of a high stakes winner take all match? Now, I don't know if he wants a piece of me, but I just think that I think it'd be something that would be really fun for us to do, and I think there'd be a lot of interest in it if we just went straight to the final round.
I'm definitely not against that. We'll play for whatever makes him uncomfortable.
And what would that be?
Well, we'll find out.
Right, so that is the match. It has been made. It will be held this Thanksgiving weekend at Shadow Creek Golf Club in Las Vegas. The interesting thing about this, guys, is that not only is it going to be a pay-per-view event, a little bit like these big boxing matches that we buy into, you're going to have to pay to watch this one. The competitors will be mic'd up and they'll be playing for a winner-takes-all purse of $9 million. So the two richest men to ever wield a golf club, one of them is about to get that much richer, but only incrementally, given the fact that Woods is worth, I'm not entirely sure how much he's lost in payouts to his various private life affairs, but he's probably made over $1 billion in the shape of his career. Phil Mickelson, maybe not quite that much, but certainly running into the hundreds of millions. So to play for $9 million, Well, I don't know. I'm not entirely sure how much that win. I think bragging rights would probably supersede the actual monetary value of the purse. But it's, of course, been the talk of the Northern Trust Open, the first event of this FedEx Cup playoff series. And Tiger and Phil have both been firing early jabs in the direction of one another.
We're going to have fun doing something that's never been done before, you know, have it on pay-per-view and doing something that's trying to showcase golf and showcase golf in a different way. And, you know, I've been able to do something similar to this, you know, under the lights, as you saw, you know, Battle of the Bridges, Showdown Sherwood, and just trying to do something different. This is definitely going to be that, and it's going to be, I think it's going to be fun for everyone because we're in a different era than we were then in those days. We're able to showcase golf at a different time and different platforms, and I think this will be fun.
Talking about how this is like a boxing match, do you see maybe a press conference where there's some smack talk back and forth? And how's your smack talk game?
I think I'm a minus 180 right now. That's all I got to say.
Tiger Woods said it this morning after his round. He wanted to make sure you were aware that he is indeed the favorite right now. Should we expect a lot of needling between you two over the next 3 months?
Oh, I don't think so, but I would like to say that over the way I'm going to play the next 3 or 4 weeks, I would get it down now because those odds are going to change.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.